The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
People like me, Paddy, from the outside looking in, like I'd have learned way more off watching the likes of Bernard Brogan than I'd have learned off Jeremy Connolly and David Clifford, because them boys are freak shows.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Football writer Martin Lipton joins us on the line. Good morning to you, Martin.
Good morning. Can I enter the competition? I know the answer.
I mean, I'm hoping that most people do this morning, but look at you. You never know. You never know. Great hype, obviously, Martin, and chat about the entire tournament that kicks off tonight. The expectation on England as well, which might be just be legit maybe this time around. It's been legit before, though, and they've come up short. Is the hype justified?
Well, it's certainly more justified than it would have been in some occasions in the past, because the attacking array of weapons that England have got at their disposal is greater than at any time that I can recall. But there is an Achilles heel at centre-half. There's still issues about the exact shape of the defence and even the midfield. So I think there are answers to be given over the next few weeks, starting on Sunday. But this is a wide-open tournament because nobody really knows how the last 18 months or so are going to affect the players from all teams. Mm. And England are a side which you feel have got more to find in themselves. Whether they'll find it is what we'll all witness over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be a great watch. We had John Giles on the show last night, Martin, and he was making the point that he was unsure generally of Gareth Southgate, and that Gareth Southgate was unsure himself of who he was going to pick in what positions and what sort of shape he's going to play, which can go one of two ways. It can be that the manager is showing great flexibility and that there's obviously a brilliant competition for places, or it can be that everybody's slightly unsure of what the plan is. We will find the evidence of that over the next few weeks, but in terms of your prediction of where that is at, what are your thoughts?
I think it would have been a lot easier if Harry Maguire was fit.
Yeah.
He'd have played four at the back, and with Maguire and Stones as his two. The problem he has is he doesn't really trust any of the others to be the central defensive partner for Stones. Maguire's not going to be available to at least the third game. I'd be actually quite surprised if he plays at all, in truth, because he's been out for some time and it's not going to get any easier. So therefore he's looking at options, and he may well go back to the three that actually served him pretty well in the World Cup. You know, got to the semi-finals. It'd be a different three, obviously, but still the same shape. And then he can play with Stones in the middle of a three with either, well, potentially White, Walker, Shaw, Mings. But that, of course, does mean the best you're going to play is a 3-4-3. And you have to leave somebody out of the attacking pad because you're going to have two wing-backs. Now, the onus then will be on the wing-backs to get forward. If it is James and Chilwell, they will get forward. We know that. We've seen that for them in club and for Chelsea and City over the last few months. So it then means who do you leave out? I think that the one guarantee is that obviously Kane starts. I think he wants to play Foden, he wants to play Mount, and he wants to play Grealish. But then he'd have to leave out at least two of Rashford, Sancho, and a couple of others. So there's a lot of issues there for him to come to terms with. Sterling, another one, I think, may be struggling to get in the starting team.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it, when you think about it? And like, in some ways, it's obviously an embarrassment of riches, but the... What's your sense of how he goes? The Maguire point is obviously a very good one, and how it impacts and stuff. And I was listening to James talking about his own experience of playing in a back three versus being a wing back, and you know, you get the players at this stage of the tournament saying, "Listen, I'm happy to play wherever you want me to play." Kind of a different, it's a different question though in terms of their experience there and how all that plays out. If he's, how do you expect him to line out on Sunday, for example?
I think against Croatia, you go for defensive solidity. So I anticipate a back three. This is purely out of, knowing they don't want to lose. England have never won their opening game in the Euros, remember. So a draw is a win in that respect. Yeah. I think he might go Walker, Maguire, Shaw in a three with James and Chilwell as the wing-backs. He'll then play Rice and... I expect Phillips, even though he wouldn't be the ideal choice, which then means you've only got three up front. I think he'd leave out Grealish and play Foden, Mount around Kane, and just try. And then he'll make much more attacking changes if he needs to. But that gives it a bit more solidity, you would argue. It does put huge reliance on Kane to score the goal. But then again, England do rely on Kane to score the goals. He's their best player. And he's also the most likely goal scorer. So that makes a degree of sense. And he loves, as we saw at the World Cup, the big occasion.
That's a really interesting one that you mentioned, Mount up front in that three. I know it's been spoken about quite a bit, but I guess it doesn't necessarily always form itself as a front three then with Mount in that position. And as you say, he can drop a little bit deeper. His role will be very interesting in that, Martin. Could it almost be a front two with him almost dropping into a number 10 type role?
He could do that, or Foden could drop in and Mount could play further. The danger with that, of course, if you've got no one running past Kane.
Yeah.
So that may be a thing that he goes into his thinking, and therefore you'd have, but then you'd have to leave one of those out to bring in either Sterling or Rashford. We know he loves Mount. If he was brave, he would play Mount alongside, even with a three, you play Mount alongside Rice, and then that allows Rashford or Sterling to play as well. But solidity is critical. I mean, the one thing we found against Croatia in the past is if we don't deny them the ball, they'll pass you to death. That semi-final in Moscow was proof of that. England got off to a flying start. Maybe they could have been two up, but the longer it went on, the more control Croatia had. Now, of course, Rakitic is gone now, but they still got Kovacic as well as Modric. They've lost Mandzukic, but they still got threat. They're a good team. They're a very, very strong, resourceful, physical team. So England have got to try to deny them possession, and when they do have possession, they've got to give them a proper wall to get through rather than be open and exposed.
Can I ask you a broader question about, to come back to the Gareth Southgate one, Martin? Just, it struck me when I'm reading John Giles' comments last night on the website that about Gareth Southgate generally, and like it feels, and you can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, you're deeper in it than we are over here, that the jury after, what is it, four years for Gareth Southgate, that the jury is still out a little bit. And the question I had was, if he was to be available tomorrow, what level of club would come looking for him?
Aston Villa level.
You reckon?
Yeah.
It's not a resounding recommendation there.
No, but because the Big Six don't appoint English managers as a rule, unless they played for the club.
Mm.
So you can see Liverpool appointing Gerrard in the future. They wouldn't appoint anybody else who was English. Manchester United wouldn't appoint an English manager. Tottenham wouldn't, by choice, appoint an English manager. Arsenal definitely. You know, it's the nature of the clubs.
Mm.
But if he was to win the Euros, that changes everything.
Does it? That's a good question. Like, does it? Because it feels nearly Gareth Southgate is such an outlier in football. Like, it is, like, it's hard to see how his personality, his way of doing things, which is so effective with England in that group, does that work at club level?
Well, it currently can. Look, I'm biased here because I've known Gareth for 25 years. And I ghosted him at Euro 96.
Right.
And he is one of the most decent, intelligent, smart, thoughtful people I've had the pleasure of meeting in my entire journalistic career.
That might not make the greatest manager from Manchester City, for example.
Well, does that make him a manager for a club that, you know, demands certain things? I think he could cope with any job, in truth. People don't realise. They think he's too nice. You don't become captain of a Crystal Palace team, including Mark Bright and Eric Young and Ian Wright, unless you've got something about you.
Mm.
You don't stand up to Doug Ellis at Villa unless you've got something about you. You don't play 50-odd times for England unless you've got something about you. You don't see things in advance, as he did, you know, in 2012, when myself and a couple of others sat down with him over a coffee in Warsaw. And he was saying, even before England played Italy in the quarterfinals, what we must do is echo what they do in golf. In golf, it's the 4-foot putt. In England, in football, it's the penalty kick. You train your mind. We haven't done that. We need to do it. And if we're ever going to be successful, we have to put that into practice. Lo and behold, what did he do when he was England manager? he changed their mindset on penalty kicks.
You've obviously mentioned there, Martin, you worked quite closely with him in 96. How much did that experience of that home tournament, do you think, shape the person that Gareth Southgate is, at least the person that he is on an international stage? And how important is that going to be over the next few weeks? Because this is a home tournament, basically, for England.
Well, the one thing, of course, is no matter what goes wrong for the players, he's been there, and worse, because it was on his shoulders. He was the one the nation, I'm not saying blamed, but he was the individual whose sole act sent England out of the tournament. So nothing the players do wrong could be worse than that. So he can give them that personal experience. He knows what it's like to be in an England squad training camp whilst a tournament is taking place in England, when the expectation and the excitement begins to build. And it tends to build slowly. It's like boiling something in a pot. It doesn't start immediately. It slowly heats up as the water heats up. And that's what will happen. And the pressure and the temperature gauge will rise. So he's able to be a valve for that because he's been there.
What do you... So, sorry to kind of come down a tangent here now, Martin, but how does that phone conversation go after he misses the penalty? Is it like, Gareth, time to write your column. Come on, cough up some words, boy.
I think it's fair to say that we all, both sides agreed it would be brief.
What was it? Was he? How did you go on? Sorry.
Well, no, but look, at that moment, you know, we're talking about someone who was still grieving.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a personal feel for the chap. What I would say is he was so resourceful. He did exactly everything he needed to do on the day he did.
Yeah. How long after?
And then he could shut it down and move on with the rest of his life. And that's exactly what he needed to do.
How long after were you talking to him?
We were talking to him the next day.
Right. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a nervous call for you to have to make, I'm assuming.
It was no fun for anyone, but it was a quarter of a century ago. I had hair then.
That's true.
You'll change.
The connection between the fans, Martin, and the team, I've heard talk about a little bit over the last couple of days. We had Dem Delaney on our Euro show a couple of days ago, who spent a lot of time playing football in England and feels that once the tournament begins, that connection that exists between the team and the fans just gets, I don't know if repaired is the right word. It certainly wasn't the word that he used. But obviously, in light of everything that happened at the Riverside Stadium not that long ago, I did wonder when I listened to him talk about it, whether from the players, England players' point of view, if it's as easily glossed over as that, and if this notion that obviously is almost a bit of a cliche in sport about we're doing it for the fans becomes a questionable thing now in light of those events.
What is interesting, I think, is I think there's that survey by YouGov yesterday that still had 54% of England fans backing the gesture and 39% opposed, which I think is surprisingly high, because if you believe what you read, which apparently that the nation's opposed to this, it isn't. But most people in the country understand exactly what this gesture is about. Those who are booing it, I think they're finding an excuse to justify something else, something that begins with an R.
No question about it. Like, you just had to look at that Brian Swanson, I think it's Sky, did a piece with some England fan during the week.
Some so-called England fan. That's what I would call him. I don't know why he would be given airtime.
And he
I've got another word for him, and it doesn't begin with R. It begins with another letter that has a similar sound. But there you go.
Egypt was the word that came to my mind, and it's not anywhere near strong enough for him. And I think that might be that might be appropriate. And it was very clear from the probing from that your point is absolutely spot on. I'm actually surprised that the number is that low, that it's 54%. But do you think that, like, I mean, the England fans, the England players, sorry, are going to be? They will have read that. They will have seen all of that stuff. Do you think it's possible, or that it matters, maybe is a better question, if a fissure exists between the fans and the players?
I don't think it does, actually, because if they're, you know, once the tournament starts, that takes over everything, particularly if England play well. And then the nation as a whole gets behind, and even those elements of the media who have, and I don't mean the sports media, by the way, here, who are other parts, or basically columnists and commentary people, shall we say. Commentators, that's the word. It's too early in the morning.
There's a lot of C words going around in everybody's head over the last few minutes.
People like, very irrelevant anyhow. What matters is the football. and how the players play for themselves. Because this is about the 26 in the squad and the manager, the 11 on the pitch at any one time. The fans have a backdrop. Remember, we're only going to have 22,000 in Wembley tomorrow. And every single one of those players has been booed before. Mm. And this booing, it will last a fragment of a second before it gets drowned out by the applause. And it's not relevant to how they play. And I think some of them will become more determined. Others will just ignore it. Most of them, they think they've made their point. Mm. They are convinced. And I think it's interesting that it's players like Jordan Henderson who are talking about the importance of this gesture. Not noticeably black, shall we say. Mm. This is every single player in the squad agrees with this.
Yeah.
White and black and whatever their backgrounds, it is a united position because they play with, they're aware. I mean, even what are these bunch of hypocritical millionaires? They're not stupid people. They live in this society. They have seen what has happened in British and European and global society. And they are using their platform to make a brief gesture.
Mm.
And that's it. But it's their contribution. And yeah. And then the moment the second whistle blows, they're playing football for their country. And you can see the pride. Look at Marcus Rashford. Look at Tyrone Mings. Look at all of those black players in particular. This is as huge for them as it is for any player in that squad because they're playing for their country and they're incredibly proud of having been selected to play for their country. I was talking to Sol Campbell last night for a piece we're doing in the paper tomorrow. And he was just talking about how when he played against Scotland, coming on for 10 minutes in Euro 96, it was the culmination of everything he had done throughout his entire footballing life to come on for his tournament debut for his country against Scotland at Wembley. That was, and even though he barely touched the ball in that match, it was one of the greatest moments of his entire life.
Mm.
It will be for these players.
Yeah, and my concern would be that the likes of that guy who was purporting to be from the England fans group during the week, they're not stupid. A lot of them are not stupid people either, but they are. It's a dangerous philosophy, obviously. And
using an excuse to try to mask the reality. I mean, there is a bit of me that wonders whether, and I'm not saying I endorse this, but I'm wondering whether if England and the Premier League were to find another gesture.
I think you know the answer to your question already. That
well, no, but if because then the onus goes back onto those who are booing because when they boo that gesture, then that they can't argue anymore that it's about something that it isn't. The biggest problem I think is that too much discussion between Rashford and Sancho about anarcho-syndicalism and whether or not Marx or Lenin was the answer to sorting out the world's problems. Because they did less of that and concentrated more on playing football. Look at the team they beat.
I know. Absolutely ridiculous. And we had it with Hungary during the week as well. And I did wonder afterwards if UEFA were sort of so obviously hell bent on coming up with their punishments for all the teams who are involved in the Super League, put a little bit more thought into maybe deciding that Hungary shouldn't be allowed to have home fans at games. And I know we're obviously just through a.
The only thing is, you cannot mandate people to act if they don't want to.
Mm.
In terms of, you cannot tell someone they have to make an anti-racist gesture.
No, but the booing of it can be acted upon because it's any reasoned person sees it as an outrageous response.
Yeah. But it is clearly an issue that UEFA are going to have to look at. I don't think it's an Eastern European attitudinal problem as well, that they think the West are looking down on them and telling them that they have problems in their society that they don't even perceive as being problems. Of course, you could say from the converse and from our Western European side, the fact that you don't see it as a problem is proof that it is a problem.
Yeah.
But there you go.
We will come back to this because it's the right thing to do. In a word, England to win?
No, France to win. They're the best team.
That was a better response. Martin Lipton of The Sun, pleasure as always. Thanks a million.
Thank you. Cheers, bud.
Oh, we've had loads of comments coming in. We'll try and bring them your way before we leave you as well at 10 a.m. this morning. Really important conversation to have, and it definitely is a conversation that we want to come back to, and we are interested in your thoughts about it, whatever the variety of them. Do fire them into us. That's where we're at. It's 9:37. We've lots to come. We're going to talk to Colm Bowie in just a little bit about the tennis, obviously winding into interesting phases at the French Open, get his thoughts on the Euros as well. But before all of that, Owen,
it is 8:37, in case you've thought you missed the clock going forward a little bit. But at 8:37, we are now, it's getting emotional. We're going into our final two cheat sheets, two crackers though for you. First up, let's get a 90-second timer for France.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.